Today is Sunday, April 15th, 2018, and it's Rosh Chodesh year. It's a big week coming up, an important week, and I need not tell you the whole world is caught up in turmoil with what happened here early Shabbos morning. Baruch Hashem, I didn't find out about it till Havdalah. Matzah Shabbos at my minyan, people already knew, but my son-in-law told me that had I gone to one of the biggest shuls in Katamon, everyone knew already Shabbos morning. So Baruch Hashem, but we have to learn Torah, we have to go further. A comment on the davening here, let me put this into the record because it reveals two different worlds. I can tell you, Eidet Nemanah, that in Lakewood, Rebaran Kutla, went over to, I believe his first name was Yosef, Yossi Tendler. It was a brother of Rav Moshe David Tendler. He's not alive. He died recently, within the last 2, 3 years. Wonderful individual who later was at Baltimore. He ran the dormitory. He taught. He actually introduced to Baltimore Chalav Yisrael. I believe he actually was the owner of the Chalav Yisrael factory that caught on in the Baltimore area. You should know, and he was YU fellow, you know, YJJ. His father was a Rebbe in RJJ. His father, I don't know if you know the whole story, but the Tendlers, the original Rabbi Tendler, never took a salary from RJJ. He was well off. He was in real estate, and he was a Rebbe in the yeshiva, but he never took a salary to the best of my knowledge. By the way, his son, when the rabbinate began, as far as I recall, Reb Moshe David did not take a salary. They gave him a certain amount of money every year that he could give to tzedakah. That was the compensation he got for being rabbi. I don't believe that continued because then the rabbinate got too big and too demanding time-wise, but it's an interesting tradition in the family. So his brother was ready to go to YU to study with the Rav. But he wound up in Lakewood, give Lakewood a try. Rebaran, it was very attractive. It was the period that I went to Lakewood. It was a little bit older than me, so I can understand. Rebaran was a tremendous lodestar. And once he went to Lakewood, he remained in that sphere the rest of his life. So I can say, Eidet Nemanah, Rebaran went over to him and told him, I can repeat it word by word, because he told everyone afterwards. Obviously, we didn't hear about, we didn't have the chutzpah to go over. Rebaran was talking to him. Rebaran said to him, Ich trach sich, as du steht shimen esrei tzu lang. It's my dining. It's my opinion that you're standing shimen esrei too long. And Rebaran told him that. And what did he mean? You know, the whole yeshiva. But we interpreted very simply that Rebaran, coming from the literature world, the main approach to God was learning Torah. And to stand Shemin Esrei too long, this was not in consonance with the Lithuanian approach. But I want to say here, if you listen to the davening this morning, I never heard anything like it. The minyan on this floor, there were a number of minyanim today, but the minyan on this floor, the Ashkenazic minyan, I couldn't believe my ears. They sang every word of the davening. The Hasidic world would rejoice. The literature world might have certain reservations, quoting Rebaran Kutler to Yossi Tendler. Okay, now, I only wish that listening today were all the people that are mad at the rabbinate and demanding reform, and everyone is picking on Mamzerut. And my own Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Seth Farb, I hope you're listening. Because you'll see today, as we continue, basically every last problem of Mamzerut can be solved. It's unbelievable what Rav Avadya does here. All within the halachic context.
And what about
relax.
Himself?
But what about what?
The Agudah problem is the husband.
The Agudah is a different problem. We're talking Mamzerut now. Now, I want to pick up exactly where I left off last week. I'll just, if you recall, we were discussing the Yabia Omer, the 11th volume, the one that just came out posthumously, Siman Tet. And here, a tshuva, and this is recent, it's Tashav, we're talking 2012. And here Avadya is dealing with a lady that got married, Chuppah v'Kiddushin, in the Rabbinate, Yerushalayim. And after a short while, she split up with her husband, didn't have a get. And while she was split from her husband, she lived with another man, became friendly with another man, and had a child before she finally got the get. And now this young man has reached the age of marriage, and he wants to marry, and the lower Beitin is worried he may be a mamzer. He's from his mother's liaison with another man without a get from the first husband. And if you recall, we ended off the first the shiur before Pesach, that Rav Ovadia decries one of the witnesses happens to be a lawyer, and Rav Ovadia declares a lawyer who appears in secular court, Eila Mishpatima Shepasim Lifnehem Lifneu Lifnei Ha'akum, that you go into secular court, you go into a court that is governed by British law, by common law, by American law, by Roman law, by Greek law, and also a little bit of Mishpat Avri. And you go into a court and you appear there, you are an absolute Mechalel Shem Shamayim, you're Pasul Yedis, you've gone against the very basic concept. Just relax, okay? Then this is Rav Ovadia. Okay? So, Jacob, this is where we ended off the last class. So, Dov, you should have asked right away, what is Rav Ovadia saying here? You parcel out Eidus? If you've learned Choshen Mishpat, if you learned the Hilchat Sanhedrin, Mesechet Sanhedrin, no, to parcel out Eidus, first of all, the person has to know he's doing a sin. I'll take you back to the Gemara, and this is such a basic Gemara in Klal Gadol. It's Samach Gimel in Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara talks about how, we've mentioned it in class in many different contexts over the last few generations. It deals there basically with Geirut, Hamet Gayer Bein Ha'akam, that someone converts, Steve, living among the Gentiles, and he doesn't know that there's Shabbos. It's an open Gemara. And the Gemara Aryeh is concerned with how many Kabanot Chatatas he have to bring. Do you consider, is it one, or do you have to bring for every Shabbos? But what do you see from there? You see that the conversion is Chal, because he didn't know he's sinning. And it's a very important Gemara. All right, how could it happen? Tosas already asked. How could it be that someone can convert and not know that there's a Shabbos? But to put it into popular language, they gave him a book to study, and the pages on Shabbos were ripped out. And he didn't know. This is a very important Gemara. Rav Moshe, I've told you more than once, Rav Moshe, it's the only topic where Rav Moshe Feinstein changes his mind. You've never seen Rav Moshe change his mind. He remains firm. On Geirut, if you go by the dates of his Tshuvah, and he gives dates, you see that there's a progression. And in Europe, he throws out all Geirut where there's not total Shmirat Mitzvah. In America, he says, I'm paraphrasing with his word by word, Rav Moshe, he says, I don't do Geirut, but I'm a Lamed Zchut my Chaverim who do Geirut, even though the Geirim aren't totally makpid in Mitzvot, in Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. But he says, what is Geirut? What do you think Yiddishkeit is? You see from the Gemara and Klal Gadol. And these people, who do they think? Who do they know? Netanyahu. All right, tell me, did Netanyahu daven with the minyan this morning? Okay? You understand? Maybe yes, maybe no. Chabadnik would say yes. Unfortunately, I'm a Litvak, and I have a feeling he did not daven with the minyan this morning. Did Netanyahu put on tefillin this morning? All right, but who's a Jew? Mat Netanyahu is not a Jew, you follow? So the Ger wants to be a Jew like every other Jew, like Golda Meir, like David Ben-Gurion, like Chaim Weizmann. All right, it's this is Reb Moshe, very, very powerful. So now you want to postulate that. In order to postulate it, you have to know, the man has to know, the person has to know he's doing a sin. And you have to bring aid in that he does a sin. So you have to say right away, how do you parcel out this poor guy? And let's dramatize it a little bit further, because I want you to see it with two eyes, what Rav Ovadia is saying. You know what's very funny? When I got hold of this tshuva, when the sefer just came out, if you were listening to the radio, they were maledicting his son, the chief rabbi, who had just maledicted the Supreme Court and the whole system here, exactly like his father. So they're maledicting the son. Open up the tshuva, you'll see Rav Avadya says it. So here I have to tell you, you've got to look into the tshuva, but now you'll understand. You see, we listen to the radio, we listen to the news. I'm paraphrasing the tshuva. Tikshoret, that's the word he uses. Everyone knows that the rabbinate is opposed to the secular courts. Everyone knows that the rabbinate is opposed to a legal system which does not follow halacha. Nowadays, you can't say the lawyer didn't know. He heard it on the radio. He saw it on television. He saw it all over the computer. He saw it on all the different websites he looks at. He is pasul le'edut. There was no wedding originally. Didn't have two edim. She therefore didn't need a get. Therefore, the kid is not a mamza. And then he goes on page Shin Samach Gimel, take a look in the second column, he goes after the Supreme Court. And he says, everyone knows Shebet Mishpat Elyon, he has Elyon in quotation marks, that they are the biggest chatsufim in the world. And they want to destroy Yesodet HaTorah B'Prachesia, Ki Yadua Lakol. Everyone knows this. If he's going to say it, this law, well, I didn't know it's forbidden. What do you mean you didn't know it's forbidden? Every kid in Israel, anyone who listens to radio, TV, reads a paper, turns on a computer, and if you're going to say they're Jewish, and you'll say, but these are Jewish judges. No. They're only Jewish judges if they decide the cases, educate according to Torah law. But if everything goes by secular law, the fact that they are Jewish, ain't a malavi, ain't a morid. It doesn't affect the situation at all. The Israeli Supreme Court, no different than the American Supreme Court, la halacha. And this individual, possibly ate it. Okay, this is Rav Avadya speaking. Then he goes further. And here's the concept that comes up in all the Shailuk and Shuvit. Look, the woman is promiscuous. Once a person is promiscuous, who says it's only with that man? Maybe she was promiscuous with many other people. And the majority of people in the world are non-Jews. So maybe she slept with a non-Jew. Maybe the kid's father is a non-Jew. If the kid's father is a non-Jew, how do we pass him la halacha? An eved or a guy who lives with a Jewish woman, the child is not a mamza. You all know, when you deal with Jewish philosophy, this is one of the interesting questions. How come if you live with a guy, and we paskin halacha, it's a machlekes in the Gemara, because it's a different opinion, but we paskin halacha, eved or guy, haba, bat Yisrael, the child is not a mamza. Why not? She's living with a man she's not married to. Because mamzerut is the nullification of sanctity. Only a Jew has sanctity. We have sanctity. If we act in this fashion, we nullify the sanctity, we create a mamsa. But a non-Jew has no sanctity to begin with. If there's no sanctity there, then you can't create a mamsa because there's no nullification of sanctity. The sanctity didn't begin with. These are dangerous words. I'll tell you why. I just found this out last week in my office. I don't know if you saw on, what was it, last Thursday? I forgot already which day. Towards the end of the week, it may have been Thursday. So last Thursday, the person who will actually print the new volume of Rakat Vararam, we had a little meeting from Shvet Ami, my Talmud, who's one of the Menahalim, one of the administrators of Shvet Ami, and the printer. We had to discuss technical matters, because he doesn't really know English, and we're giving the book to another Talmud of mine, who studied in the Kollel, who was a professional in putting books together. And this book has to be put together properly. It's not like Chelek Gimel, that's only Halacha. Here there are four different sections, and it needs a very skilled hand in putting it together. I hope it will work out nicely.
In English or Hebrew?
It's all in English. All in English. Thursday was not Chol HaMoed. What are you talking about? We're a week after Yom Tov already. This is the second Shabbat after Yom Tov. You got the. I'm still eating matzah, but that's because I love matzah.
I'm kidding. Back to normal with
the family. So, the week after. So, the publisher was showing me. I should show you. I should bring it to class. It's amazing what's going on now. All the books he's publishing for Russia. And it's just amazing what we can do. And he lives in Israel, Shvet Ami. He's a Chabadnik. He's from. He's associated with Shvet Ami. He's Chabad.
And Michael
is involved with outreach beyond Russia. He's involved with these 10 lost tribes. But these are not lost tribes. These are people coming back to Yiddishkeit. So he has a printing press in Kharkov. And it's just as cheap there to do it as China. As you know, all of Art Scroll is done in China. It says printed, published in the United States, but in reality, it's actually printed in China. It's put together in America. You give them a computer program. You tell them what you want, and you tell them you want 100,000 copies with this type of binding. Within 2 months, you get exactly what you want. The Chinese are excellent. In Kharkov, excellent. It's like Chelek Gimel. It's exactly the paper I wanted with the binding I wanted. Not too heavy, but stiff. So he shows me all the books, but he says, now in Russia, he says, they're retrogressing. I said, what do you mean they're retrogressing? He says, there's one book I cannot print now. You won't believe what it is. Tanya. That even Rav Lazar, according to what I was told, doesn't have the influence. They don't want Tanya published for the Moscow community. Can anyone tell me why? Yitzchak, you raised the issue months ago, years ago. What does Tanya say? A Jew has a different soul than a Gentile. And evidently someone whispered this in the ears of the authorities, quote, end quote, in Russia, and it can't be published. So you see, this attack here, you got to go easy and explain, what does it mean that a guy can't create Mamzeret? On one hand, it's like you're complimenting the guy. On the other hand, when you really look into it, you're denigrating the guy. He has no Kedusha. Mamzeret is an abolition of Kedusha. But nevertheless, halachically, once again, he raises this issue that we have another suffix. One suffix is that this Jew with a beard and payas and a bekisha who happens to be a lawyer. And once you're a lawyer, my daughter, for instance, is both a Tawenet and a lawyer. And she appears daily, one which will tell me on Monday she's in the Beitin. On Tuesday she's in the Beit Mishpat. And she knows the Dayanim and she knows the judges. And she has to function in both. Hey, wait a minute, you function in the Beit Mishpat? Look what Rav Ovadia is saying. And that's one big suffix. Pasul Yedut. Never was a wedding. Excuse me?
She's a woman, she's
Pasul by the way, with a woman, it's not, with Biradova, she's not Pasul today. She's accepted in every Beit Din in the world. In Biradava, whenever you need Biradava, even in the Eta Charedit, they'll accept a woman on Biradava. But take a man, fine. It's Pasul Yedut. One suffix. Second suffix, who says this promiscuous woman became pregnant through a Jew? Maybe a guy. Aye. Then he raises another. See, these issues come up again and again and again. And Rav Avadzhi repeats it time and again. But you see what he's putting down here are principles. That you can always go with Rov Bilot Acharei Hagoi. Or now another principle that he questions. Wait a minute. What are you saying about the guy? Don't we have another principle in the Gemara? Tell me, how do you know who your father is? How do you know who your father is? Arge, do you have brothers?
Yeah.
So watch. You inherit a big estate. You and your brothers. And your brothers come along and say, we don't believe you're from the same father and mother. Prove. All right. What can you prove? Very easily. Who your mother is, right or wrong. They're witnesses out of what womb each of us came out of, right or wrong. You get a birth certificate. Hey, how do you know who your father is? That birth certificate, they ask the woman. All right, she'll answer. She's married. You can't be certain. Right? The Gemara raises this issue. This is with Jerusha. It's a well-known issue. So what does the Gemara say? Rov bilot acharei habal. That if a woman is married, the majority of her sexual encounters are with her husband. And therefore, we can assume this is your father, and you have the right to inherit your father, and your brothers can't push you away.
Where is this
Kabbalah? It's all over Shas, but in Baba Batra, it pops up. Look up Rov Bilot Acharei Habal. If you don't find it, I'll give you the exact source. But it's all over Shas. It pops up in a number of sugyas.
So So
Rabbi Vajra asked, wait a minute, how can I say, that it's the guy and she lived with and other people, if we have a concept, Rov Bilot Acharei Habal, and wait a minute, if this is the case, whose child is it? On one hand, she shacked up with this individual, maybe we can say it's not his child, it's Rov Bilot Acharei Habal. But she shacked up with this individual. If that's the case, this is the one she's living with. This is the one she's in the same house. Maybe Rov Bilot Acharei, this second guy that she's living with. How do you have a right to say she's promiscuous? But the Rav Avadzhi says, who is this guy? He's a Belial. Boel Eshet Ish. Here, this whole concept of Rov Bilot Acharei Habal may not apply. She's living with a guy that's totally unconcerned with halacha, calls him a Belial. Boel Eshet Ish. She's living with a woman who doesn't have a get. And therefore, this concept is to say that this is the man she's living with is not applicable here. And this here, his exact words, Afagab Demrinim Bialma, Rov Bilot Acharei Habal, Zehu Kishachim Nesuin Keheta, Kedat Moshe V'Yisrael, Avol B'Eshetish, Yoshevet Yachad, Emeze B'Lial, Haboel Eshetish, Lo Shayach Rov Bilot Acharei Habal. And in simple English, and this concept comes back time and again, logically speaking, we would say, all right, she was married to Mr. Goldberg. She left Mr. Goldberg. She shacked up with Mr. Weiss. Day in and day out, we see she goes home to a home which reads Weiss. She has a bank account that reads Weiss. We don't see her running around in bars and grills and hotels, etc. Maybe we have to say, Rov Bilot Acharei Habal, in the sense, Rov Bilot Acharei, the man she's living with, she's mitjachedet with, she, in simple language, is shacked up with. Rov Bilot Acharei, Mr. Weiss. No, that concept only applies if Mr. Weiss is a kashri yid. Cares about the Neshadish, cares about the Nida. But here, this Belial is living with a woman who didn't give a get. Who knows what type of sexual life they lead? And this concept that Rov Bialot Acharei Habal, this concept is not applicable here. So Rav Avadya Lahalacha stands upon the fact the lawyer is pasul, and if that isn't enough, maybe she lived with a guy, there's a sveik sveiker, and he's matir the child lahalacha to marry kedat ukedin. Adkan siman tet. Very important shiva. If the world doesn't pick it up, I will be amazed. It's amazing. You know, there's a lot of amratzot. People talk about topics and they go to the computer and then they give lectures, but this is the heart of the issue. Let me see someone pick it up. And let me see Rav Ovadia. People will argue, people will yell, people will scream. How do you apostolize a lawyer who goes to a secular court? But Rav Ovadia, it's for the sake of the child. You follow me? We do everything in our power to save the child. All right. Watch the next shuva now. And what he touches upon here, I hate to tell you, is halacha lemaisa. I'll tell you a funny story with the frumkeit that doesn't work. How many of you are practicing rabbis? How many of you have been Masada Kedushin? So I can tell you, in the last 49 years, I never had any problem being Masada Kedushin, because I was always Masada Kedushin for people who were my Talmidim or family, friends who knew what was going on and know Hebrew. But now let me take you into the rabbinate. Here I am, Rabbi Maplewood, South Orange, New Jersey, not far from where Herbie Maltz was living at the time, still has a daughter living there, a grandchildren, family. And you're Masada Kedushin. I don't recall ever being Masada Kedushin for anyone who knew anything. You're Masada Kedushin. This was Amcha Yisrael, the 1960s. You can draw your own conclusions. Maybe Rabbi Zakheim had a more traditional crowd in Newark, but shifting sands in Newark as well. So now, let's go to Siddur Kedushin. Dov, do you remember what you said to your wife many years ago? Harayat mekudeshet li b'tabat zu kedat Moshe b'Yisrael. Right or wrong? Now, tell me, you take an American kid who doesn't know Hebrew, and all he's going to do, you're going to tell him, repeat after me. Haray. All right. At. Mukudeshet. Li. Tabad. Su. Mukudeshet. Li. The rabbi leads the kid on. What are you saying? Mukudeshet. Li. You follow me? The Tabad. Su. So in the rabbinate, I came up with what I thought was an eitzah, a good solution. I say to the kid, repeat after me. Mukudeshet, say li. So the kid repeats, say li, like a Chinaman. Do you follow? Jacob, it's common sense. You're saying to the kid, say li. He says, say li. No, I mean you say li.
You know that proves that the rabbis have to sit with the cousin before the wedding and explain it.
Believe me, I sit, premarital conference, etc. But anyway, the problem is a problem. We try to solve it. But you'll see how this comes up. But I never forgot that. Say Li. And the kid, even if you told him before, but he's a nervous wreck under the chuppah. I just was Masada Kedushin for Garish to a Grusha. A frum kid to a frum woman, a Talmud of mine, and the guy, the second marriage, right? Everything should be calm, collected, And I'm there. We're waiting. All right, the plane has to come in from Florida. The people are already landed. They're coming. The rabbi from Florida, Rabbi Davis, and the kid goes to chuppah without a ketuvah. In other words, here I spent so much time preparing the ketuvah, and I had to check what name she wanted. He said, you understand what name is last name today? The RCA ketuvah always needs a last name. So when you're getting married the first time, there's no problem. Everyone knows what where they're coming from. They all know their father's last name. But what name do you use when it's a second marriage? What name is she using? And I didn't know what to do, and I had to speak with her, and then we had to get confirmation, and how do you spell the name? And I worked so hard, and how do I spell Port Washington? I can spell it my way. But I want to know what they spelled. So the rabbi there wrote it out, Port Washington. They spelled it the Yiddish way, you follow? Not the way we would spell it in Israel. Not that, I'm not such an Amharic, it's not a get, it's only a ketuvah. But after I put all this effort in, I take a look without asking nothing. Plop, we're under the chuppah. How to do the ketuvah, under the chuppah. Minag Yerushalayim. But Saley, okay, you'll see now how this is an unbelievable little story, but this is what happens in life. We're now Siman Yud. All right, the Shaila, a woman whose husband ran away to Chutz Laretz, and no one knows where he is. He's gone. And this is, I think you know that the Israeli rabbinate, again, they don't get credit. Everyone criticizes the rabbinate, but give credit where credit is due. You know that the Israeli rabbinate has detectives that they employ. I happen to know one of them. He's a Shvatami graduate. These are gangsters who can handle any situation. These are Shin Bet people who work for the rabbinate full time trying to locate recalcitrant husbands all over the world, particularly in Russia, Bukhara, Georgia, but America and Canada as well. So here, this is part of the problem today, that a guy can disappear. There was a story with Borough Park. The guy got into trouble with the law. The next thing you know, he's a clean-shaven guy from Borough Park is in Bnei Brak with a beard. Go and find him, particularly in the 60s, the 70s. Today, when there's computerization, it's a little bit easier. But and then you have a problem with passports. Now they've gotten very biometric. They're more careful, but you should know. I know cases of people who there was a tzav to a warrant for their arrest at the point of entry or exit from Israel, and all they did was buy a passport on the black market of a guy with a beard. When you have a picture of a guy with a beard, well, it's very hard. The beards look the same at times. If the facial features are slightly similar, go and prove it's not you. Today, with the biometric, it's easier. But I know cases, I know one case individual where he went back and forth on a phony passport. Unbelievable, but true. So, this guy ran away, go and find him. Since the guy ran away, listen to this, she gets involved with another man and they live together as husband and wife and they have 4 children. At the end of 4 children, she finally locates the husband and he agrees to give the get al yedei shliach, which is what the people who work for the rabbinate do. You can't bring the people back here, but you get them to sign an authorization and aid them, and it's done kedat v'kedin, and the get is administered here. And she finally gets the get, and the kids are now want to get married, and unbelievable shailah mamzeret, not on one child, not on two, not on three, 4 children. Well, the rabbinate starts investigating. Now, I can tell you a little story. When you talk about investigation today, you have no idea what's involved in investigation. And this is a story that happened right here, around this building, my own Talmud, my Rav Ovadia. It's a very famous case. I don't want to mention names. The people are alive and well. And this was a young man who had a hard time. Some people fall in love easily, and some people have a hard time. And you all know that's part of life. Most fall in love easily, but there are, they say in every family, I've seen it in life, I see it, there's always one who's going to have difficulty. And this fella, his siblings all got married. I taught 5 out of 5 in this family. And he had trouble. And finally he finds a girl, a Stern College girl, and one terrible problem, she is divorced, he is a Kohen. So they take the case to Rav Ovadia, and Rav Ovadia tells them, just like you saw a minute ago, try to see who were the Edom, if the Edom were kosher, look at the movies. They actually looked at the movies or the video, whatever you would call it today, of the wedding to see that the ring was given, to see that everything was okay, to see that the Edom saw, and they were looking desperately to find the problem with the wedding ceremony. And, you know, sometimes I have to tell you, I go out of my way. When I'm a Sada Kedushin, I say to the witnesses, did you see? Are you watching clearly? You understand? There's a lot of excitement. All right. They couldn't find the fault. But Ad Kedei Kach, they checked everything out. In this particular case, I'll just tell you in parentheses, what they did find was an unbelievable little story. Some of you may recognize this. It was all over the Anglo community. They found who was the girl. The girl was a Bala Tshuva who studied at Stern College and was a Talmidah, one of the Rebbeim in Stern College. She loved this Rebbe, and her whole life, he was her spiritual mentor. And she insisted that he be Masada Kedushin. And the Chatan went along with it. He had no Rebbe Mufak that he felt very close to. And this rabbi, who's a Yidit Tzaddik, should live and be well. He's no youngster today, not in the best of health. He said to them at the pre-nuptial meeting, what Yitzchak spoke about, he said to them that I need 2 witnesses. Each one of you choose a witness, okay? So the Chatran chose a friend of his, and she chose the landlord where she was renting an apartment with other girls. And this landlord, you know, she didn't really look into. She knew him, and given a Yiddish mensch, a survivor. And it turned out, when they investigated, that he used to take the bus to shul on Shabbos. The shul was too far for him to walk, and he got on the bus on Shabbos. He was a traditional Jewish survivor, but not totally halachic, we'll put it that way. So Rav Ovadia parceled him out, and they were able to get married. It has a very sad ending. With all that Rav Ovadia did and went out on a limb and parceled out the aid, because he took a bus to shul, and it's lo pashut, because taking a bus may only be an isa derabanan. You follow me? Money, what's involved, that's an isa derabanan, not an isa deoraita. All right, he parceled him out, and the marriage didn't last. But I'll say, for the credit of my Talmud, the next girl he met, who was no problems of divorcee, that marriage has lasted, Baruch Hashem, for many years, l'kavod l'tiferet. I don't know what happened to the other girl who twice was married and twice divorced. So it also shows you something. Now, why, with all this introduction, what happened in this case? This already is a little bit different. They investigated who were the Aiden, what happened at the original marriage, and they found at the original marriage, after making a chakira v'drisha, it turned out that the ring was not the ring of the chatan. What happened? Under the chuppah, he didn't have the ring. Maybe he forgot the ring. I always tell the chatan before chuppah, Where's the ring? Who has the ring? You know, people are fatumult. If my Talmud could run the chuppah without a ketuvah a few weeks ago, people are fatumult. Where's the ring? And he didn't have a ring. The mother of the bride gave him her ring. Hatabat shel kedushin hayta shel em ha'isha v'natna oto labal sheyekadesh ba. Now you get involved with a tremendous question. Tell me, Lulav and Etrog, first day of Yontif, whose does it have to be when you take it?
Yours.
V'lakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. And this is why we go out of our way to make clear that if you lend your lulav and etrog to someone, you have to give it to him a total matana. Not just sheila. Has to be totally his, beyond any question. This is why, Baruch Hashem, in Israel, everyone has their own lulav and etrog. But where you have paucity, sparseness, you have to make clear that this belongs to the kahal. And the Kahal purchased these two Luvavim Etrogim, three Luvavim Etrogim, with the concept that each one who takes it owns it. It's yours for the time that you're being Notel Lulav and Etrog. And all right, no question, you have to know what you're doing. Alacha kama v'kama, when the Katan gives the Kala a ring, it has to be his totally. And this is the tremendous question. Do we depend upon the fact that people know, that people understand, that people take this ring and they make a total kinyan? Well, no, they don't know what's going on. They are befogged. And this takes us back to what I said 15 minutes ago. Say Lee. The average person under the chuppah, they can be frum from today to tomorrow, but they're in a fog. They're in a daze. And if we go back and we could watch this wedding, the chatan is under the chuppah, the rabbi says, take the ring. Oi, I don't have a ring. I don't know what I did with it. I left it home. I didn't take it. I forgot it in the car. The mother of the bride says, no problem. Niyet problema. Here, take this ring. He grabs the ring. He puts it on the woman's hand. What were his kavanot? Oh, boy. Now,
doesn't the rabbi ask him if this is your ring, though?
Is that yours? You're assuming that the rabbi at this point knows what's going on. Obviously, if the rabbi was a Talmud Chacham and he saw what transpired, he would insist that the woman give him her ring and she would have to say, I'm giving you with total matana. It's no longer mine, it's yours, make a kinyan in it. He would have to lift the ring upward, he would have to walk Dalet Amot. Obviously, the rabbi did none of this. Or I can tell you even further, who knows? He's not clear, he doesn't spell it out. Who knows if the rabbi knew what happened? Could be that before he went to chuppah, he says, Ayvei, I don't have the ring. So the mother of the bride said, here, take this ring. The rabbi didn't even see. You follow? But you see here, what you're getting involved is a contemporary question, and I only wish people are listening to me. Everyone's attacking the halacha. How many of you have heard some of the talks on the 25th Yud site of the Rav? So many, many, many different talks have been given, many different locations, many different speakers. So I wanted to hear what others are saying. I listened to a few. Some are nice and some were very aggravating. But you listened, it's not just the talk on the Rav, it's part of his whole thesis. you take Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardoza. Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardoza, he's angry at the Rav. I couldn't believe my ears. He's quoting basically Yitz Greenberg. I know where he's coming from. Yitz Greenberg originally gave a talk a number of years ago that the Rav was a lower lane. I hate to even repeat it, but I have to fit it into the context here. That the Rav disappointed us. Why did the Rav disappoint us? He opened up the modern world to us, but he didn't walk in. In other words, the Rav enabled us, like Rakefet said in his talk in Reitz, that we never, and Rabbi Blau agreed with me, I had Rabbi Blau say, Eidut Nemana, that we never felt a chasm between the Torah world and the general world. The Rav, it was just beautiful. There was no problem to step from Torah into the bigger world back to the Torah world. The whole concept of Torah Derech Eretz, as the Rav understood it, or as I put it, a Torah Jew in Western context, you felt totally at home. And Yitz Greenberg takes the Rav to task that he opened up the big world to us. But he should have changed halacha. Why do we have to live with these concepts that disturb us, etc., etc.? And Lopez Cardoza picks up on the theme. And he goes back to something he's been saying in lectures for the last few years. Why don't we have a different halachic system? Why must we paskin like Hillel? Why can't we paskin like Beit Shammai? You've heard this question. Why can't we paskin for the sake of argument like Abaya when the halacha should be like Rava? It's not Jal Kagam, etc., etc. So I have to tell you, obviously, if we start interfering with the halachic system, the entire deck of cards is going to cave in. You understand? Shabbos is Shabbos, Kashrut, Kashrut. But I have to tell you, I gave Sherman the Kollel 2.5 years worth using as my starting point the Kutras HaShach in Yoredeya Resh Mem Bet on how do we paskin. I trust they teach this Kutras in Yoredeya when you study here. So you should know. Occasionally, we will use shitot that are not the final halacha. And we put them together, it becomes a sniff and another sniff, and you create a svek-sveka, and I went into great detail. So you see, on this question of marrying someone with a ring that is not yours, that the ring was given to you, so when you look in, to begin with, the Ramah seems to paskin, the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin, Hashoel chepetz mechavero, and if you're borrowing a ring and you tell the person, I want it to be mekadesh and isha mekudeshet. But if you don't tell him what you want to do with the ring, it's a suffek mekudeshet. But see, what do you see there? The simon here is chafchet, sif yutet in the Shulchan Aruch. But everything is right here. You can get all the sources in the Abiya Omer, Siman Yud, Chelik Yud Aleph, Siman Yud. You see, you're dealing here with a world where the people are knowledgeable. And that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins. But the Rabbi Ovadia comes up with many tshuvot where it's not so simple. And he quotes a tshuvot HaRashba, where someone is Mekadesh and Isha with something that he borrowed. And the Rabbi Shbar already says that the marriage is not chal because people don't know what they're doing. People don't know the laws. People don't know the halacha. People are not learned. People don't understand. When you give someone a ring to be Mekadesh and Isha, it's not just borrowing, lending, she'elah. It has to be a total matana. And he says the proof that people don't know everything is lulav and etrog, exactly what we spoke about, where we're insisting that on first day yuntif you have to spell out I'm giving you the lulav and etrog as a total gift. It is absolutely yours. But if you don't spell it out, the person is not yotzei. And the Tshuva HaRashba says the same thing with borrowing a ring. He does not accept the conclusion that it is Kedushin. At the most, it's a suffix. So that right away, you are creating a suffix. And Rav Avadya goes further. This is the concept. Don't get involved. This is the Gemara says this so many times over. People who are not Bekiyin B'dinei Kedushin should not be involved with Kedushin. And when you're dealing with the populace, you're dealing with people who are not involved with Kedushin. And if that is the case, the fact that the mother gave the ring to the husband-to-be to give to her daughter, it's a big suffix whether this is really his ring to use. That's point number one. Then Rav Avadya quotes Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. The Ein Yitzchak. Yitzchak, you can see the source right in the tshuva. I don't want to go into it. We have it in the library downstairs. And what happened? This is life. Listen to this case. That a woman gets a ring from her husband-to-be. This ring is the woman's ring. Her mother gave her a ring to be fancy, to be attractive, to look mature, sophisticated. Her mother gave her the ring, and she gave the ring to this man, Lekadesh Ota. And Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan raises so many questions, gets involved with a different problem. Tell me, don't we have a klal koma shekana isha kana ba'ala? When a woman buys something, doesn't it belong to her husband? So the mother who gave her this ring, what right did she have to give her the ring? The ring belongs to her father, not to her mother. You're getting involved here with very, very fascinating problems. Does this klal apply today? Maybe the klal only applied where women didn't work. Nowadays, women work. Women have their own possessions. Not everything is owned jointly. Does this klal apply? And Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan turns it into a sveika. Number one, maybe the woman had no right to give the ring to her daughter originally. And even if she gave the ring to her daughter and had the right to give it and the husband would have agreed, maybe the daughter, when she gave it to the man that wanted to marry her, didn't have kavana to give him a total gift. Once again, creating a sveika. You know where this applies, lahalacha? I'll tell you where. Jacob, what are your plans? To be a practicing rabbi? To be a scholar? Which is it? Practicing rabbi. All right. I can't argue with you because when I was 23 years of age, I had one goal in life. To make every Jew in the United States a Shomer Shabbos. That was my goal. You can ask Yitzchak. He had the same goal too. That's the way we were. Over the years, I'm happy to say I'm a Shomer Shabbos. We'll leave it at that. Jacob, you're going to be a rabbi. Let's talk rabbinate business. Part of your task will be to raise money, right or wrong. You have to cover the shul's budget. You have a day school in your community. You have to build a mikveh. Maybe you want to help Israel build an institution here, help an institution, help Gruz Kollel. So now you're raising money. And in your kahila, you have a family that's very wealthy, very successful. They have a big manufacturing plant, wonderful, good, honest, fine Jews. And you, this lady attends your classes faithfully. And she and her husband own this business. And now you go and ask her for a contribution, and on the spot she writes out a check for $18,000. Are you allowed to take that check? You follow the question? Are you allowed to take... But this comes up, but Yitzchak, this is Mama Shusi, Shailat and Shuvit on it, contemporary. Are you allowed to take the money from the woman without her husband's permission? You follow me? But then again, modern life, how does modern life work? Modern life, the woman controls, she's a part owner. Many times the woman owns more than the man. You know why, Yitzchak? For purposes with the government. If they give the business, if they give, exactly, if he gets into trouble in this business, that business, you can't touch him because you can't touch her. She owns the house. He can declare bankruptcy. She owns the house. She owns this. All right, women today. But the Shiloh is very interesting. But when it comes to save the kid, to help the kid, we go out of our way to create Sveikot, to do everything we can. So here where the ring that the woman originally got was not her ring, but it was the ring of, what was it here, the mother, it was his mother-in-law, gave him the ring, l'kadesha ta'isha, so there's a tremendous suffix, maybe this lady is not married because the ring did not belong to him, he's not such a great Talmud Chacham, she's not such a great Talmidah Chachamah. The rabbi may or may not have known what was going on. It could be this happened before they were under the chuppah. And there's a big suffix. He didn't give her a ring. If he didn't give her a ring, they're not married with all the kosher edom in the world. This is number one. Number two, and this is something that plays a role in halacha. Chazakah. We have a chazakah. Always count the cheskat kashrut that comes up time and again in halacha. Tell me, what was that woman originally? She was a penuya. She was not married. If there's sveikot about the marriage ceremony, she retains the original status. She was a penuya, and she remains a penuya. And Rabbi Avadya quotes some of the great achronim, the poskim that we live by. He quotes the Pri Chadash that when there's a sveika de dina, when you're in doubt what the halacha is, she retains her chazaka. She was a penuya, she remains a penuya. The first marriage never took place. And then Rav Ovadia adds, and this is time and again, she was promiscuous. She lived with the second man. She had four children with the second man. If she lived with the second man, who says that she had the children from him? Maybe she lived with Gentiles. And if that's the case, they're not mamzerim, because a guy does not create mamzerim.
Isn't that an assumption on his part?
It's an assumption because you want to save a mamzer. You're right. It's absolutely. It's not. That's what we spoke about before. She's living with a man without a get. The rov be a lot, goyim are in the world. This is what we're doing to save the child. But we're doing everything possible to save the child. This is Rav Ovadia. And then then you got to see the sources here. Everything has sources. That even, who says they're not from the first husband? She's technically married to the first husband. Even if the first man may have gone Eva Hayam, far and distant away.
Did they have DNA testing in those days?
We'll come to DNA next week. Relax. Everyone's jumping on DNA. I'll get there. They didn't have DNA yet. This tshuva, what year is it written? Let me see if we have the year.
Yitzchak Chan
certainly didn't have DNA, but Rabbi Avadja, there's no year here. There's no year. But they, even if they had DNA, we'll get there. And then even if she didn't get a get, if she didn't get a get, even if the first husband went across the sea, sources say perhaps he came back. Rov bi'irlot acharei habaal. So you have one suffix after another. And then he quotes, and this is a case that he quotes time and again. Everyone, I don't know what's going on. There's so much criticism of the rabbinate. Without Rabbanim, we wouldn't be sitting here. I don't know what the criticism is about.
The criticism
is Naguna, not Rabbanim. No, the Naguna they do, the Rabbanim do, and the Kashrut in Israel, what's going on with Soha.
And also,
you might think you can't eat in any place. I don't know. I know when I think in Yerushalayim, in order, if you go into a milchika restaurant, how can there be anything there that you can't eat? A milchika restaurant we're talking about.
Maybe it's open Shabbos.
No, we're talking where it has a certificate from the rabbinate. It's not open Shabbos, you know. And the vegetables are all gush katif. Everyone eats gush katif. It's such a pleasure. I don't know why this... So you'll take meat. Meat already is more of a problem. There's kosher, there's glatt kosher. I'm not happy with that distinction. I wish that we would have one standard of kashrut, let everything be glatt v'gamano, and we can sell off what's not glatt halal. There's a big market here. It'd be fabulous. I still suffer Hebrew National. It hurts me because Hebrew National may be the biggest producer of kosher meat in the world. I don't know if in Israel there's a factory as big as Hebrew National. And when Rabbi Raubach Sr. died, they turned, or was Rabbi Stern already, whatever it was with Hebrew National, they turned to, I believe it was Rabbi Stern who died, they turned to the OU to take over the Hashgacha. You know what that would have meant? Hebrew National under the OU, and the OU turned them down. And I remember I asked the Tzar of Kashrut at that time, should live and be well, he's Manny Holzer. I asked Manny, I say live and be well,
he's gone
already, Lower Lane, he was ill for many years. So I asked Manny, why don't you take over? He said, we don't have enough glatt kosher meat. And I don't know, why couldn't they create a new schlachthäuser, a new source? I don't know. And there are enough, you know, there are enough chabatnikim, enough satmar, enough chassidim who don't go to college, don't go to university. They're not in medical school. They're not in law school. But many of them become sheikhtim. You have plenty of chassidish sheikhtim around. Create more positions. I don't know. I guess it was overwhelming for them. But I wish we didn't have that distinction. I wish, all right, we want to be glatt. The Sfadim need glatt. The Ungarish need glatt. We can all eat glatt. We can't be harmed by eating glatt. So even though I'm a Litvak, I can eat glatt too. But it's a shame. But why can't we give the Rabbanim the credit they deserve? All right, there are certain problems in Kashrut that have to be cleaned up. You have a big system. If I had my way, all of Kashrut would cost nothing. It would be given by the state as a service to the citizens of the Jewish state. State is 70 years old. Baruch Hashem, they provide us with police, provide us with an army, provide us with hospitals, provide us with education. They can provide us with Kashrut. The state should cover everything. It should be out of the hands of money between the machshirim and the muksharim, and the state, it would be wonderful. It would be a dream. But let's not criticize the Rabbanim so much. And you see here what Rav Ovadia has done, safek after safek. Now, what's very important in rabbinate is derech eretz, is respect. Our entire tradition depends, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai Masri Yeshua Shulis Kenim, the earlier generations. Never forget the story that, believe it or not, Aryeh, I'm an ear witness to. You read about this in our scroll, you heard about it from your rabbeim, perhaps you listened as a wise aleck kid and said, the Rebbe's making it up. Believe it or not, I was sitting on the plane, 1980, right next to where this happened. It's a very simple story. It was the conclusion of the Knesiyah Gedolah, Agudat Yisrael, the last Knesiyah there ever was, probably the last Knesiyah there will ever be, Ad Biat Mashiach Tzidkenu, because there's so much machlekes in the Haredi world, unfortunately. And I was going to America, a shliach of the Jewish Agency, to speak on the campuses in Colorado, Denver, to combat Arab propaganda. And I'm sitting up front, and there's Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky sitting right beyond me. All the big shots of Agudat Yisrael around the plane to see Reb Yaakovov and Reb Moshe. And, oh, what a sight. Rav Ruderman may have been on the plane as well. And everyone went to sleep, but Rav Yaakov was awake, and he was involved in a lusty conversation in Yiddish with Yeruchim Meshel, the head of the Histadrut. And Yeruchim Meshel, you can look it up. This is the old-time Histadrut, the old-time Mapai. And standing over Rav Yaakov is a teenage... a young man standing over him. Finally, Rabbi Yeruchim Meshel turns to Rabbi Yaakov and he says, "Where's the younger man? Who is this youngster?" And Rabbi Yaakov says, "It's my grandson." And Rabbi Yeruchim Meshel is in a state of shock. He says, "What? That's your grandson? My grandchildren don't even speak to me. We have nothing in common. And take a look how he is standing over you and he wants to help you, anything you need. Wow." And Rabbi Yaakov says, "I'll explain to you. You come from a world where you believe man came from a monkey, an ape. So why do your grandchildren want to be close to you? You're closer to the monkeys than he is. But I come from a world where our whole work centers around Matan Torah. I am closer to Maimon HaSinai than my grandson. My grandson only wants to be close to me because he can latch on to someone who's two generations closer to Maimon HaSinai." And what a beautiful Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yeruchim was overwhelmed. I was sitting right there. So what a story. So you see, if the earlier Rabbanim, the earlier generations are so important to us, when I speak of the Rav, I shiver, I shake. I saw Rabbi Aaron Cutler, I saw Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin. I shiver, I shake. The Kedusha of the Torah, halavai I should come to the nails on their toes. So Rav Ovadia says, and he quotes this time and again, I already mentioned it many times, that 100 years ago in Yerushalayim, when the Rishon Lefim was Rabbi Yaakov Shalal Elisha, and he sat on a basin, and he gives the names Rav Franco, Rav Gagin, and he gives the sources where it's published, and they had a question of mamzerid, of a woman who became pregnant, and they didn't know whether it was after the divorce or before she got the get that she became pregnant, and they put together sveikot, And among the sfeikot was that perhaps if she was promiscuous, she was promiscuous with a guy. And if they put that as a big safek, and they were able to hatir the young man not to be a mamsa, then we can depend upon these poskim 100%. You follow me? They agree. Herbie, everyone understands there's a problem here, but we want to save the kid. And he says, these gedolei Yisrael, ain't the ram tzrichim chizuk, they don't need me to agree. Ki ein b'chem niftul v'yikayish, there's nothing that's not logical. This is halachically logical. Ubenuyam al adnei ha'emet v'atzedek, lekein bati alachatam lahalacha ulema'aseh. I totally agree with the earlier generation. Who are we to argue with them? Who are we not to accept their ruling? And therefore, I totally agree, and I sign both lahalacha in theory and both lema'aseh that these four children are not mamzerim. Wow, what a tshuva. And at the end, Rav Avadya says, v'dan minei v'yuki b'atrein. You should learn from this tshuva and apply it wherever you can. Okay. Beautiful tshuva. Beautiful tshuva. Fascinating. The ring, the chuppah, the life.
There's so much on these things. That's why I have difficulty following it.
Rav Avadya, his koach de hetera, nothing could stand in the way. When he made up his mind, nothing. I can still remember when I went to him with the Yavama, with the case I had, and I came up with the Sfeik Sfeika right here in the Kola, looking at Benny Blau, my student. I just met his son, Chalamayid, his seer studying at HaKotel, and looking at Benny, it hit me, wow. And all the Dayanim, they wow, they said, Rakefit, very brilliant, beautiful, but we don't have the backbone. We need someone big. So everyone told me to go to Rav Avadya. So I had the ability, because I knew Rav Avadya, because I taught his daughter. So I got in. It was a time already where it was not easy to get into Rav Avadya. This is not the early 70s. This is the late 80s. It's a different ballpark. So we got in, and I tell Rav Avadya, and I could see his eyes light up. Within a minute, within half a minute, he understood my mahalach, my machshava, my sveik sveika. You follow me, Avi? This is Rav Avadya, and he said, I'll never forget, he said to us, I was there with the lawyer who took the case pro bono. I'd sent him to Russia, our Dov Frimmer, and he said to Dov, within 10 days, you'll have a written tshuva from me with all the sources. And that shiver is unbelievable. It's published in Chelek Tet of Yabbi Yoma, but he made it conditional. Two more gedolim have to agree. And I got a shiver from Abshal Yisraeli and a shiver from Abshalom Mashash. It's all published. I can show you. It's in Bakai. If you look at Washington, you have the source right there. And lahalacha, we didn't have, it was lahalacha, lamaisa, we didn't have to do it. Because it was 89. 90, the Iron Curtain fell. We got the lady in, and she got chlitza, paid $1,000. The guy jumped for joy, and he pleaded, get me a visa to come to Israel. So who knows where he is today and what the story, but what a, but that was Rav Avadya, Koach de'hetera. Okay, let me go one step further. That may inyan le'inyan,
Biyuto Inyan. Isn't Rav Moshe the same thing with the Mamzerim, with the lady? He found out that the Reform rabbi.
Rav Moshe is not as far-reaching as Rav Avadya. Rav Avadya is much more far-reaching than Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe deals with the Reform marriage, the conservative marriage, that there was no marriage, and that's relatively easy, lahatia. That's Zil Krebi Ravu It's compared by Rebbe Avadya with Bilat Acharei Habal, Rov Bilat Acharei Habal, she's still married. If she's promiscuous, Rov Goyim, Rav Avadya is a little bit more than Rav Moshe, but Rav Moshe too, when it comes to Mamzeret, the Rav Moshe wants to parcel out an aid in Newark, post-World War II, where the Ketuv is signed in English. And Rav Moshe says if the man signed the Ketuv in English, it's a sign he wasn't from. You follow? And by the way, Rav Moshe is right. If anyone signed in English on the Ketuv, it's a sign already they were far from Shmirat Shabbos, like most Jews. But Rav Moshe didn't have as many cases as far-reaching. Rav Avadya is sitting as the Av Beit Din, is sitting as the Rav HaRashi of Eretz Yisrael. The cases that we have here with the incoming of all the exiles, wow, what Rav Avadya had to deal with. And here's a beautiful story, a difficult shaila, but a beautiful story indicative of our generation. I obviously won't finish this today, but let me begin. Eben Ezra, we're Chelek Yud Aleph in Yabia Omer, Siman Yud Aleph, 1994. And here we have the names. It probably was a case that reached the Beit Din HaGadol here. The question concerns a young man, Yud Feingold. He doesn't give his first name, but let's say it's Yaakov Yitzchak Feingold. His mother's name is Shirley Roof, and it's written Shirley, transliterated, Shin Yud Reish Lamed Yud. So what does that tell you right away? If someone's name is Shirley Roof, it tells you they're not religious, the usual story. Baruch Hashem, we have in Israel tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of young men and young women whose parents were not religious. Okay. And look what Rav Avadya writes. This is Rav Avadya with all the warmth that he has. Shehumi balei tshuva hayikarim. That this young man, Feingold, is one of the dear balei tshuva. Zahir b'mitzvah kala kachamura. And he is careful about mitzvah kala kachamura. I don't have to translate. Chared l'dva Hashem. I mean, what a description. And not only that, and his whole deportment is filled with derech eretz and his midah tovat. And he's met a young girl who's also a balat tshuva. Isn't this the story of our generation? How many of you are active in NCSY? What are we talking about here? Isn't this the NCSY before our eyes? The hit orara baya etzel roshem hanasuin, and when they went to register to get married, a problem came up. Why? Because it became clear that the mother of the chatan, Shirley Ruth, was married 50 years ago to a man named Vav. What's Vav? Velvel, let's say. Kalmanovich. And obviously Jewish. And after 2 years she left him. And she got a psak din the Supreme Court of America. Now, I don't believe this case would go to the Supreme Court of America. It probably was the Supreme Court of the state in which this happened. But Rav Avadya says, Beit Mishpat Elyon Sherakaot Vatzot HaBrit Shechulat Levatel Etanusuan Halalu Biglal Sherofim Mumchim Heidu Bifneihem Sha'ish Chole B'machlat Shigaon. And oh my gosh, the Supreme Court of the state, I'm pretty sure it's the state, annulled the marriage because the man was mentally ill. U'bishat ha'nesuin savar mi machlat ha'nefesh. And this illness did not happen overnight. he was mentally ill at the time they got married. My dear friends, what we're touching upon here is one of the classic cases, and this is something that anyone, all of us that have had life experience, I can tell you with the rabbinate, I had a young man, must have been early 20s, to speak with him, totally normal. His actions, totally normal. And then, suddenly, go off the deep blue end. No way to explain it. I went to visit him in an institution where he was hospitalized, and we had a normal conversation. I remember about politics. It was the early 60s, whether JFK was president or Lyndon Johnson, and normal. And then before I leave, he says, "Rabbi, do me a favor, please talk with the doctor. The nurse is trying to poison me." And in all sincerity, normal tone of voice. Very hard to tell if you didn't know that this person is not totally with it. At first glance, there was no way you could tell. And here you have a case, not that he became abnormal afterwards. He was abnormal at the time of their marriage. And once they annulled the marriage, lo kibla get kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. Evidently, she felt she didn't need a divorce, or it was unimportant to her, a divorce, or she was misguided by a reform rabbi, a conservative rabbi, and she got married civilly to another man, and from this other man, Feingold, that's to whom she had this son, Yud Feingold. And now Yud Feingold, that Tzadik Yisod Olam, Makpid b'mitzvot, Kalat Chamura, and he meets this Balat Shuva, they're in love, it's beautiful, Inve HaGefen b'Inve HaGefen, and when the Roshen Nesuin asked the questions, suddenly they're worried stiff that he may have the status of a mamza. They check it out. He's from the liaison with the second husband, Feingold. There was never a get from Kalmanovich. She married Feingold legally, civilly, but not halachically. But her first marriage, it turns out, was annulled because the man was insane. He was mentally ill at the time of the marriage as well. It didn't just happen 2 years later. Oh, my dear students, we have just opened the Pandora's box. We're going to see basic halachic questions here. Mental breakdown. A woman, marriage at all costs, tav lemeitav dulume, lemeitav amala, what we're going to get involved with here. How does this affect modernity? You can ask me next week, Rabbi Rachman's whole proposal shows up in the Tshuvot. Where do we draw the line? More basic, how do we believe a civil court? How do we believe non-Jews? What are we talking about here? Look how Rav Avadya went crazy against the Beit Mishpat in Eretz Yisrael. What's the status of a civil court in Chutz Laretz, where it's really going? And even if you say there's a Jewish judge or so, and even a Charedit woman, what's her name, Fryer, do I have the right name? Rachel Fryer, that wonderful woman who's a judge today in the Supreme Court in New York. So what? But it's Gaya Shalom. Can you believe them? Can you trust them? What a question. What about this kid? Tzadik Yisod Olam. Is he a mamza? Isn't he a mamza? My dear student, today has been a very important shiur. I just scratched the surface. You can go into detail on any topic we touched. There's endless material available. But I want to walk away from here with a feeling of respect, not criticism. Gedolei Yisrael, I tell you, the Mamzeret problem we have totally solved. If we accept Rav Ovadia's Tshuvot, let's see the way the Gedolim accept it. But this is Rav Ovadia. You have Rov Echareach, a Rov creating a Suffolk on top of a Suffolk on top of a Suffolk. Meika Hadin, a Suffolk, Mamzes Mutal Avol Bakal. No, we know that. Lo Yavon Bakal, Hashem, Kal Vadai, Gemara in Asari Yuchsin. Psil kri beravhu, but the rabbanim mala su chachamim biyuchasin. But when you create sveikot, efshala hatir, and look at Rav Ovadia. So you have the case of the lawyer, and reading, and he knows we're angry. He reads the newspapers. He hears the news. He goes online. Very fascinating. You have the case of the lady who's mitkadeshet with a ring that was given to the man, the kadeshota. Is that good? Is it chal? Is that tofes? It catches? Wow, wow, wow. And all that's involved, say li. Repeat after me, say li. Lula venetrog, yom rishon. Oh, wow. And then we now introduce the new case, which we'll build upon Be'ezrat Hashem next week. Gentlemen, I would not miss tomorrow's Shia for all the missiles that are being dug up in Syria at this moment in time. Tomorrow I have Isaiah. Tomorrow's Manashevet's going to show you something so fascinating with Manashevet's. But, and we'll deal with the whole machlokes of matzah. And it's amazing what happened, that Manashevet's conquered the world. But before we talk about tomorrow, let me give out everything. Yitzhak, will you see Michael Miller?
I put it in his mailbox.
Okay, here's a book for him.
Okay.
A gift.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Here's someone named Yitzhak Goldberg, an MD, was a Talmud of the Rav, younger than I am, a memoir of the Rav. Very nice. I have one correction here. It was the Rav's annual custom to visit his wife's grave in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, on Erev Yom Kippur. West Roxbury, he writes, Massachusetts, on Erev Yom Kippur. It was an annual. The Rav used to visit his wife's grave
every Friday.
So that's just a small correction. But I've told that story. I don't know if you got it from me or others. Now, this is a Talmud of mine who's involved with Kabbalah. And he comes up with something unbelievable with what's happened here with the American embassy, the recognition of Israel, why they're doing it May 15th. There are two copies here. If you're interested, enjoy. This is from the New York Times. When neo-Nazis marched through Berlin's old Jewish quarter, a bookshop took notice. It's about the people in Germany who care, who are fighting the Nazis. This is about the other Schindlers who risked their lives to rescue Jews. It's Yom HaShoah material. Very interesting. This is about Jews, baseball, and the Yiddish press. And the underlying is that you couldn't succeed in America if you didn't know baseball. And this was Solomon Schechter. Solomon Schechter said at a graduation of the seminary in 1910, already that early, he said, if the rabbis don't know baseball, they'll never succeed with their congregants. This is Aaron Lichtenstein. What happened was, Rabbarim, they came up with a tape. Rabbarim gave a talk at Yivo, it may be, on the difference between Chochmat Yisrael and Wissenschaft. He spoke in Yiddish. It's not much different than my Shayura many years ago when I dealt with the same concept, if you recall, with Chachmat Yisrael. But anyway, it's Reb Aaron, and they go into a whole analysis of what he said. Very nice. This is on
well,
Alex...
Chachmat Yisrael is Limude Kovic, I guess, and
Wissenschaft
is
Limude Kovic. No, you got to hear Rakefet's lectures. You'll have a better understanding. Wissenschaft can be Limudei Chol, but it can also be Limudei. When a guy studies Wissenschaft, it's Limudei Chol. But a Jew can study it, but it's a different approach. You can be a tzaddik, but it's more scientific. There are differences. This is on Alex Bregman, who's baseball's next Jewish star. He's up there now. This is very moving. This is about a White Sox employee who served 23 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit, and he got his job back at the White Sox at Comiskey Park. Very moving article, and he was welcomed back. There's some people working there who still remember him from 23 years ago. DNA saved him. DNA saved him. And this is something, Halacha L'maisa, Lo Aleinu, all the stadiums today have more netting, and baseball improved fan safety, but in court it's teams that are protected. You know what that's about? That Lo Aleinu was Jewish people were injured, Yankee Stadium, someone hits a foul ball, hits you in the eye, you can lose your eye.
Okay.
And you cannot sue the Yankees. Why? Because when you buy a ticket, on the little print it says the team cannot be held responsible for any accident that happens as a result of the ball game. You follow? When you walk into a stadium, you waive your right to sue. So it's very fascinating. I know about this, and it's Lo Aleinu, a Jewish kid, was badly, badly hurt, and now they put more netting on. That
Alan Dershowitz was on the case.
It doesn't help. Once you buy the ticket, you're supposed to have read the little print. So Alan Dershowitz may or may not be able to help. But they now put on much more netting, so it blocks the vision to a certain degree. But it's, you know, you get used to it. But on the other hand, it's the netting in the areas where the ball will hit with a lot of force. In other words, if you catch a ball in center field, you're not going to get hurt. The chances are you're not going to get hurt, because by the time the ball hits center field, it's lost its velocity. You follow? But if someone fouls off a ball behind first base, you can have a ball coming at you 100 miles an hour, and it hits you, you don't have time to duck, or you don't react quickly, you can be very badly hurt. So it's a very interesting article. Okay, tomorrow I'll talk about the new book on Lubavitch and Lakewood. We have more to do at the end of this year tomorrow, but Dayel Tzarab B'Sha'ata. I want to thank everyone for coming and honoring me with your presence. I am very appreciative. Yeah.
Before you finish, could you perhaps just give a short answer? Hallel with or without a bracha?
It's interesting that you say this, because I just got a link. Arye Liebman sent me a link, which I knew, where the Rav is carrying on that he's a great Zionist and a great Mizrahiite, but he doesn't say Halil and Yom HaTzmut, and if you're going to say, certainly not with a bracha. What the Rav is talking about, of course, is the Gemara and Shabbos, that if you say
this is once a year,
and in other words, you can't over. It's like saying that's all you're saying. We only say, if you're going to really go, then you can never stop saying. But we say what the Navi said. Anyway, halacha lemaisa. Today it's many years later, and what the Rebbe is saying, there's no formal takana. We don't have Anshnei Knesset Gedolah. Those who say with the bracha say as follows, that the Gemara says, I believe it's Daf Kuf Tetvav in Psachim, and Abay Psachim, so the Gemara says that if you have a nes, you have to say Hallel, and we have this tremendous nes, so we have to say Hallel. So it's like the Gemara said, you have to say a bracha. Halacha lemaisa, I don't say a bracha. I say v'noma lefon of shira chadasha, halleluka. But I don't stop anyone who wants to say a bracha. On the minyan of my davenet, they all say a bracha. Everyone says a bracha. But I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I know what Rebbe's hesitant with the Gemara. I raise a machare from a gadev. Later in the recording, making the rounds is in Yiddish. It's from the 60s. But could be 50s, late 50s. Years later, the Rav told everyone, all right, if you want to say Hallel, he felt you should say it after Uval Etzion, after the Kaddish. So it doesn't interfere with the Seidat Tefillah that Anshei Knesset Gedolah were mitakein. That's also L'chala Dayot, no one can have an objection to that, because Halil is Psukei Dezimra, you follow?
Is it true that the Rav would say Bracha if the rest of the minion was
saying? No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I can't believe that. But I have in the tape, you can hear in my office, I think I erased it already, that one. The Rav would never say a bracha. How can he say a bracha if he held that there was not a takana?
But
halacha
lemaisa. In all due respect, I have the Rav, but I wouldn't follow him because the miracle of this state is so great.
I agree.
I've been saying with a bracha. When I'm here.
All my children say with a bracha. So if they say with a bracha, it's like I'm saying with a bracha. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I have too much derech cheret.
In the Gemara, you have a Tana who told his son, who was almost, he could have been the Skan Nasi of the
Sanhedrin,
but he didn't want to differ in four things. So he stood apart. But then before he died, he told his son, "You should follow the Rav." He said, "So why didn't you do it?" Because I heard it from a gadol.
Right. Because I saw Rabbi Meir, the expression, and I saw his. You're seeing his back. I saw his front, etc., etc. But I have too much derech eretz. But Halacha Lemaisa, as long as you say Hallel, it's beautiful, that the miracles are great, goes without saying.
Chodesh Tov.
Chodesh Tov.
Listen, I was telling Yitzhak, I'm going to follow you in this Shavuos thing.
But that's what the Rav Paskin, can I tell you?
In saying a bracha, I don't follow on that.
Not beside that, you have freedom of
choice.
You're
ready to go?
Okay, until we meet again. Yosef, are you here tomorrow?
I'm here tomorrow, yeah.
Okay, when do you go back?
Sunday.
So you better be a very serious young man. When do you start your internship?
Next year. I started my last year of school.
1 year and then internship. So I told you the story with my brother and Reb David Lifshitz. My brother was Reb Heschel Shechter Schavruta for many, many, many years. Okay, they grew up together. So Reb David always pressed my brother to be. To be like his older brother, be in learning. I was a big learner. The day that my brother told Reb David, I'm going to study medicine, I've been accepted to Einstein, so Reb David's whole demeanor changed, and he said to my brother, I'll say it in English, he said it in Yiddish, "You have to be a very careful student now. If a rabbi makes a mistake, all right, it's not the end of the world. He's mater a ben yomo when he shouldn't have been. Nishkefelech. But if a doctor makes a mistake, it can be terrible. So you have to be very careful. You have to be a very good doctor, Be'ezrat Hashem. And above all, you have to come back an aliyah. Because you got to remember, when you're a doctor in America, you only do one mitzvah, gemilat chesed. Here, you're doing two mitzvot, gemilat chesed and binyan ha'aretz. You understand? Anyone here, a medical doctor, a competence, you help build the land. And you can't put a price on it. And I had a very interesting experience last week. If you notice, I had a little operation on my head. So the surgeon recommended to me a sebaceous cyst. So finally my day comes, my appointment comes, and I tell him 30 years ago I had a similar operation, sebaceous cyst. I asked him what causes it. He told me what causes it, but they don't know what causes it. They know what causes it clinically, but what causes it to clog up, they don't know. And I say, but the operation was on Rehov Keren Kayemet in that area. I don't remember the name of the doctor. And he looks at me and says, "I was the doctor." He says, "I was the only doctor." And he says, I said, "You know something? The doctor had exactly your build." And he says to me, "From the day of 18, when I put on the army uniform, I have never gained a pound. It's that exact gestalt." And 30 years later, there he was operating again. So you see, this is Binyan Haaretz. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Yes, sir.